move on to our next case, Advanced Cast Stone versus Local Union 1. Mr. Deedy?
May it please the court, Patrick Deedy on behalf of the appellants in this case, Iron Workers Local 1. In this particular case, the district court decided it is a contractual issue that arose between the Iron Workers and Advanced Cast Stone in September of 2000 at a job site at the New Goodman Theater in downtown Chicago. That particular dispute was over whether or not Advanced Cast Stone was bound to the area-wide or what's known as the principal agreement of the iron workers that existed at that time in the Chicagoland area. When this matter was presented pursuant to the collective bargaining agreement to the Joint Arbitration Board, that hearing was held on January 18th of 2001. That arbitration award was opposed at the time by Advanced Cast Stone on the grounds that it was not bound to the collective bargaining agreement, which included this particular arbitration provision. Despite that objection, the arbitration board determined that, in fact, Advanced Cast Stone was bound and that had it been in violation of the contract at the job site at the Goodman Theater in the fall of 2000. It was that particular arbitration award that was challenged by Advanced Cast Stone in the initial case filed in the district court in April of 2001. The issues raised in that case make it clear that that particular dispute was a contractual one. The objections were, or the motion that was made to vacate the arbitration award was based solely on the fact that Advanced Cast Stone claimed it was not bound to the area-wide agreement of the iron workers. That's the basis upon which the court heard trial testimony in March of 2002, and that was the basis that the court in September of 2002 issued its initial determination that because of the course of conduct of Advanced Cast Stone, it was in fact bound to the principal agreement terms in which it would be required to comply with the arbitration award. That award was for Advanced Cast Stone to submit to a payroll audit for the period from August of 1998 through January 18th of 2001 and to pay wages and welfare contributions for any violations that had occurred prior to the date of the Joint Arbitration Board's award. During the course of that entire proceeding, after the April 2001 lawsuit was filed, there was never any issue raised by Advanced Cast Stone concerning what was really a subsequent dispute at a separate job site at the Deerfield, Illinois, which involved the unlawful picketing by the iron workers of Advanced Cast Stone, which resulted in a Section 10K hearing before the NLRB in May of 2001. The NLRB heard testimony regarding whether or not there was a reasonable basis to believe that an unfair labor practice had been occurred and made other determinations with respect to the jurisdictional dispute that had arisen between the bricklayers, which had a contract with Advanced Cast Stone, and the iron workers. That NLRB decision, that 10K determination, turns out was actually issued a few days before the board, the district court, rendered its decision in Advanced Cast Stone.
Didn't anybody know that was coming?
Well, I think everybody knew it was eventually going to come. The parties had briefed the matter completely in May and early June of 2001. The NLRB had it under advisement for the better part of a year, but there was no attempt by Advanced Cast Stone to seek to stay the contractual issue that had been presented in its own complaint and the iron workers' cross-claim for enforcement of the award. And I think that's because, as I think some of the cases indicate, there are situations where the NLRB on its own or a party who is involved in those proceedings will view a pay in lieu of work claim that arises in conjunction with an NLRB Section 10K proceeding to be a further evidence of illegal coercion by the union in that case, in those cases, to attempt to obtain a reassignment of the work. That was not the issue here because, and we believe that's the reason that the district court made an incorrect determination with respect to whether or not the NLRB decision was really in conflict with its determination that the arbitration award in January 2001 should be enforced. The NLRB determination was really a resolution of the dispute in Deerfield, which arose in May of 2001, and it was a prospective order that prohibited the ironworkers from otherwise seeking to claim any of that work or seek to have reassignment of that work. So it's our position that the reason that the district court decision reversing its September 2002 decision, that is the July 8th, 2003 granting of the motion for reconsideration, is an error because in that case, or excuse me, in the NLRB case, it is really a question of whether or not the two different awards can be honored by Advanced Gastone without interfering with the other.
There is an inconsistency. I mean, clearly the board disagrees with the arbitrators. So shouldn't we give the board's finding effect? It is, you know, agency. It's supposed to know what it's doing.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that the issue that the board had presented and the reason it was considering the Joint Arbitration Board decision is because one of the elements of the Section 10K hearing is whether or not it can decide that there is, in fact, an agreed-upon arbitration provision. The NLRB did not decide any of the contractual issues. It did not decide whether or not, through its course of conduct, Advanced Gastone actually ratified it or actually complied with the contract. And we believe that the district court was the proper venue to determine the contractual dispute. The NLRB determination on the unfair labor practice, although it may consider particular contractual issues, is not the ultimate or, in fact, is not the exclusive remedy for breach of contract claims.
But the question is what weight to give its view.
Well,
give its view controlling weight?
I think if you did that, Your Honor, I think you would end up with the result that the ironworkers or any union would have difficulty pursuing legitimately its contract claims if at any future date an NLRB determination of what was, in this case, a clearly contractual dispute between Advanced Gastone and the ironworkers could be overruled or determined to not be in effect at a later time. We believe that's why the district court, in addition to misconstruing the non-conflicting or the fact that these particular awards would not be in conflict, we think that when you look at the actual determination by the NLRB, it did not reach the same factual, in fact, intensive determinations that were found by the district court in September 2002 decision. And we believe that that was the correct determination of the facts in this case and that the NLRB's determination with respect to whether or not to give any weight to the JAB determination was really incidental to what was really the determination with respect to the award of the work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Deedy. Mr. Wild?
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Tom Wild on behalf of Plaintiff Appellee Advanced Gastone. Your Honors, this case has a somewhat tortuous procedural and factual history, but it boils down to a jurisdictional dispute. And everybody agrees that if the board issues a decision pursuant to Section 10K and that decision conflicts with an arbitration award, the board's decision takes precedence or it trumps the arbitration award. So this case really boils down to a determination of whether or not the JAB's arbitration decision conflicts with the board's 10K decision. And it's our position that the court properly determined that there was a conflict.
Well, why
doesn't the judge ever ask to sit on this for a while? I mean, didn't the decisions from the NLRB come down a couple of days?
The NLRB's decision came down 4 days after the court issued its decision, and the court was unaware of it. Neither side, nor did the board intervene, ever asked the court to stay the arbitration or the district court proceeding pending the NLRB's award. Frankly, we never expected the board's decision to take as long as it did. These are priority cases that are supposed to quickly and easily resolve jurisdictional dispute.
Somebody knew it was there and didn't bother to tell district court.
Now, the district court knew that the board's decision was coming. The day that we received the board's decision, we sent it over to the judge immediately, but the judge had ironically issued her decision that same day, which is sort of the unfortunate consequence of the timing here. But it's our position that you can't reconcile these two decisions.
There are two types of inconsistency. One is that they're intellectually irreconcilable, which I think is true. But the other is that the other type of inconsistency is where a firm or an individual is actually subjected to inconsistent obligations. So we don't have the second.
Well, I would argue that we do. This court has decided two cases that get close to this situation, but not quite, and that's Hutter and Myron. Those cases, and there are board cases like them, involve a breach of a subcontracting clause where the general contractor has a contract with, for example, the ironworkers that says you only subcontract work to firms that have contracts with the ironworkers. If that general contractor breaches that subcontracting clause and assigns the subcontract to a firm that, let's say, has a contract with the laborers, then the general contractor can be found in breach of the subcontracting clause, while the subcontractor may be found in violation of a Section 10K proceeding. So the general contractor in Myron and in Hutter, for example, was subject to breach of contract damages.
But what about your situation?
Well, my situation is the opposite. We have no subcontractor. Advanced Cast Stone was responsible both for the work assignment and for the alleged contractual breach. The cases that are like that
The arbitrators, if I understand correctly, they want you to pay the iron workers some past fringe benefits?
The Joint Arbitration Board's decision would require the company to pay the iron workers both wages and fringe benefit contributions for the period of August 6, 1998.
Now, if you do that, you're not breaking some other contract, you're not going to get it. Would you get in trouble with the labor board if you paid them, or the labor board would?
Well, the problem would be that the JAB's decision would say you're contractually bound to the iron workers, and the board said no, you're not for the same period of time. I mean, the iron workers.
But it's going back. It's retrospective. For the future, you wouldn't be caught between the board and the.
Well, I think we would be, because the iron workers and the Joint Arbitration Board would contend that we were bound to the principal agreement, which means that you're bound to the principal agreement going forward also until such time as the company terminates it. So the JAB.
But you wouldn't be breaking your contract with someone else, would you, if you were honoring your.
If going forward we were to start assigning work to the iron workers, then the bricklayers would simply be at the company saying, wait a minute, this is our work, and the board determined that it's our work, and now you're giving it to them.
So you are concerned that you would have inconsistent obligations.
Yes, and that's what the First Circuit and the Third Circuit and the Sixth Circuit have found in other cases where, like this one, there is no subcontractor. And those are Key Equipment, Local 30, United Slate, and Rockwell. In all of those cases, the circuits, the courts of appeal said there is an inherent conflict. This contractor, our Advanced Cast Stone, is subject to completely conflicting awards. One that says you give the work to this union, the other saying that you give it to that union. And you can't comply with both of them at the same time. Now, the iron workers have tried to sort of compartmentalize the jobs in the time frames here by saying the JAB's award was all about the Goodman Theater and the issues before it, or the projects before it, where the board's decision was all about the 9 Parkway North project in Deerfield. But the face of the decision shows the opposite. I mean, the JAB, as we just discussed, covers the whole period going backwards, and it would have application going forward until such time as Advanced Cast Stone was able to terminate its agreement. The board's decision analyzed that whole same course of history. The board's decision talks about the Goodman Theater dispute. It talks about the 3 jobs done under the short form agreement in 1998. And because of the continuing conflicts and disputes between who the ironworkers and the bricklayers and Advanced Cast Stone over who gets the work, the board took the extraordinary step of issuing an area-wide order, which it does not often do in Section 10K proceedings. And it said, look, these parties have had a history of disputes. The ironworkers have illegally picketed at least 3 and maybe 5 or more job sites, and to reconcile this and to fix it, we're going to issue an area-wide order that says all of Advanced Cast Stone's precast installation work in the iron workers and bricklayers overlapping territory goes to the bricklayers. That's totally inconsistent with what the Joint Arbitration Board did. And I think the one thing that is very well settled on this issue is that where that board decision does conflict with an arbitration decision, the arbitration decision has to stand down, and I just don't see any way that you get around that here. Both decisions cover the same span of ongoing problems. And the other issue, of course, is the fundamental one, which I think Your Honor referred to as the intellectual inconsistency, and that is the JAB said that Advanced Cast Stone is bound to the principal agreement, and the board said they're not. The iron workers have argued that the board really didn't address or analyze the contract issue, but that was the threshold key argument in front of the labor board, because if Advanced Cast Stone was bound in any fashion to that principal agreement, then there is an agreed-upon dispute resolution system, which means that the board will not hold a 10K hearing. The parties can't avail themselves of that process because they've contractually agreed upon a different private process to resolve disputes. So that was the threshold issue in front of the labor board. Almost all of the same evidence was before the labor board. You can see it throughout their decision. They talk about many of the course of conduct arguments that the iron workers rely upon now to say that Advanced Cast Stone bound itself to the agreement. And the board looked at that and found that Advanced Cast Stone was not bound to the principal agreement or any other agreement with the iron workers. The short form agreement had been terminated by that point. So there's really no escaping that inconsistency between these two decisions. And this case really presents a case of first impression to this court in that it does not involve the subcontractor like Hutter and Myron did. This, I believe, is the first time this court has confronted the situation that the First Circuit had in T Equipment, and that the Sixth Circuit had in Rockwell, and that the Third Circuit had in Local 30 United Slate. And in all of those cases, the court recognized that there's an inherent conflict between awards and circumstances like this, and the NLRB's 10K decision has to take precedence.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Weil.
Thank
Mr. Deedy, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Your Honor, with respect to the question of whether or not the other decisions that Mr. Weil referred to should control, I would point you out to the fact that, or point out the fact that in each of those cases, as in the Rockwell case, the T equipment case, and the Local 30 case, the decisions of the arbitrator were prospective. That is, they were orders by the arbitrator involved in the same between the same unions and the employer to actually prospectively direct the employer to employ the union members who were the ones who eventually lost the Section 10K decision. In this particular case, if you look at the JAB decision, it is really retrospective in nature. It is ordering a wage and welfare audit with respect to from the date of the decision in January backwards, ordering back pay and wages. All the decisions that have...
Yeah, but what's to prevent you from going back, invoking arbitration, and asking the arbitrators to give controlling weight to the previous panel's findings?
Because in that case, that would be a situation where the NLRB would deem it to be a direct violation of the 10K decision. In this particular case, after the 10K decision is rendered, there was no additional determination by the NLRB here in Chicago that the pursuit of
this... That's very strange, because you're conceding authority to the Labor Board to control the future and preempt any inconsistent arbitral award. That just creates an arbitrary difference between past and future.
Well, that's exactly the difference that the NLRB makes, Judge. I would refer you to the case that's cited, I think, on page 10 of the...
So if the Labor Board had been faster, had been quicker off the mark, then it would have wiped out the...
No, I think...
Wouldn't it?
I don't think it would be faster. The Labor Board makes the determination with respect to payment in lieu of work claims that arise prior to the 10K determination and those that arise that are filed and pursued after the 10K determination. The NLRB made a decision, and in the case is I think cited in one of the footnotes, it's the Georgia Pacific case, in which they found the pursuit of by a union of its wage and welfare claims pre the 10K determination for past contractual disputes to be valid, whereas the post-10K allegations or assertions of a arbitration award were found to be in violation of the NLRB's Section 8B4D. So there is a distinction here, and I think it's recognized in the NLRB. We think that the district court could have also similarly recognized that distinction, that on its face, the JAB determination does not conflict with the NLRB determination of the subsequent events and could easily have allowed enforcement of that award on a retrospective basis. Thank you, my time.
Okay, thank you very much, both counsel. Next case.